8.07 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Thanksgiving Eve. We're glad to have you here. Text line is popping at 343-0106. We're also checking in with our buddy Jeff Poor from Landyap at Yellowhammer, Breitbart, and a man who, like we talked about the other day when he joined me for midday, will soon be making the great decision to move into the world of radio. I tried to caution you, man. but thanks. And hopefully we'll still be able to do this, right, when you're a big radio star.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't quite say moving into the art of radio. It might be just dabbling in the art of radio.
Well, I think you're moving on in. I think you got the back boxes packed up and you're moving in. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But I want to get into a couple things right now on the national front, too. And that is the president and his reaction here for the Saudis. Is it? I want to ask this on a couple of different levels. He may have, might have been the prince, might have known, he might not have known. I get it. It does cause me some heartburn here over the years, the way we have to treat the Saudis with kid gloves, whether it's post 9/11, whether it's this situation because of, you know, needing an ally in that region. Also, the fact that they've got their fingers on the pulse of OPEC and the oil. But I hate playing nice. And Dalton?
Well, the president tweeted about this morning, just to bring us 100% up to the moment. The president tweeted, oil prices getting lower, great. Like a big tax cut for America and the world. Enjoy, $54 was just $82. Thank you to Saudi Arabia. But let's go lower.
Yeah, you know, I think if you're talking about what happened in the market yesterday with the price of a barrel of oil, $53.20 or whatever it was going, that was driven by a lot of factors. I don't know that the Saudis made that happen yesterday. But, Jeff, what about this? I mean, this and Barack Obama did the same thing. Bush did the same thing. Played ball with the Saudis. But, man, I don't like it. I guess I like less price for gas, but I don't like dealing with these guys.
Well, until fossil fuels are obsolete and we have other means of fueling our automobiles, I think we're going to be dealing with the Saudis. That's just the fact of that. It's the fact
you're right.
Of life.
Yes.
And you may not like it, but what do you like more? Do you like not like more? Do you like not like dealing with the Saudis, or do you not like having to go pay to go fill up your gas tank $50-$60?
Right. Well, and that's a question. I mean, that if you want to look from a populist angle, which has been the success of President Trump, from a populist angle, I think you're spot on. I think more people will quickly forget about what happens a world away with the Saudis and with the Turks, and we'll be concentrating on what happens at the gas pump. But just over time, whether it be post 9/11 or now or any other thing, it does bother. But you're right, absolutely pragmatically, you are correct. This will soon pass.
Yeah, and I think right now you're just hearing a lot about it, just because of the politics, and it's seen as a way to score points against Trump. So yeah, is it the biggest thing in the world? It's certainly not a good thing, but is it the thing that's going to be what gets Trump or whatever? And when you tune in to MSNBC or CNN, and is it a big deal as they think it is? I don't think it is, and I think it'll pass.
I agree. I think it does pass. It's just in its long term. I'm pointing out to people that there are just three presidents recently have played ball with the Saudis, and you know, for those reasons.
Well, we've been playing ball with the Saudis going back to Kennedy. I mean, it's been a long, long time.
Agreed. I'm just saying, in recent memory, you know, there's two different parties, three different presidents, and all playing ball with the Saudis. But like you said, until we get off fossil fuels, that's probably not going to change.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is. Maybe you make nice the Iranian regime and that freezes the Saudis out. I mean,
they're no better. the Iranians
are
no
worse. Right?
Yeah.
That's what kills me, the hypocrisy of it. Like, yeah, we're making deals with the Iranians and giving them cash. Buying cash in the Quran.
On pallets,
all these weird things, but the dead journalists, I mean, it's just a different world over there. It's unfortunate what it is, but that, you know, to act like this is something new and unusual is a farce.
But let me ask you this question, and good morning, happy Thanksgiving early. Are you surprised, though, about those on both sides of the aisle who have pushed back and have publicly lambasted the president for his stance, where it looks like it's becoming money over you know, the country. I mean, you look at Senator Bob Corker, who tweeted, "I never thought I'd see the day a White House would moonlight as a public relations firm for the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia." You heard from Senator Jeff Flake. You've, of course, heard from Democrats. But are you at all surprised? I mean, what I think this has happened, I think most people can agree it's happened amongst and through the various administrations. But are you surprised that those who are publicly pushing back?
Give me somebody besides Bob Corker and Jeff Flake on the Republican side, and it, maybe I'm surprised. I mean, you know, maybe if I'm sure Lindsey Graham will say something, but it won't be as forceful as those two.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, you know, give me somebody else on the Republican side that's really outspoken about this besides those two on the way out the door. And then maybe I'd be a little more surprised.
Yeah, it's and I think that it's incumbent upon us. Don't point fingers at the Bush White House or the Obama White House or the Trump White House, because we the people, exactly what you said in the beginning, I think there's a lot of truth in that. Mm-hmm. That yeah, people get people, pundits on TV and commentators and people on social media, but all they'll be all outraged. I don't know if I'm outraged. I'm disgusted by it over time. But we're not the major voice. The major voice are people that go to the gas pump, and you know, it makes a big difference when there's an extra $20 in your pocket.
Well, I kind of wonder what is the goal of the mainstream media for going after Trump on this? I mean, we just had an election. You're 2 years away from the next election. So what are you trying to accomplish here? I don't know. Are we trying to kind of marginalize the president and how he deals with the Saudis, or what? But I think that card's been played too many times, the media card, that is. And it's just looking to probably a lot of people, your casual observer, it's just the media doing the anti-Trump things, as they always do.
All right, let's shift gears here, too, but staying with the president. The president's written response to Mueller, what about that? What do you know this morning?
So I think it came, the timing of it's a little surprising. Headed to Thanksgiving, you know, the news cycle's kind of dying down, but it is front and center. I think that things you get from the Trump administration are that this thing's winding down and we're finally going to get a resolution. It's been 2 years. We need to get this done and figure out what's out there. That to me is what they're trying to signal by making this public. That is the alternative, but what does it mean? What is Mueller going to do? I think Mueller drags it on a little bit more. Why would he wrap it up, even if he can't find anything? Because you've got all these high-paid lawyers, and you have sort of an infrastructure already there that just was looking for a reason to exist. So I think it, you know, I don't think it's going to wrap up quite as soon as the Trump administration would like. But this is meant to show that, hey, we're playing ball with these guys. We want to get this over with, and now the onus is on you, yep, Robert Mueller, to get this out and get a report out.
No, I think that's well played. I think that is well played. We'll talk about this more when we return. More with Jeff Poor right here on Mobile Mornings. Of course, Thanksgiving Day Eve edition of the show. Nobody says that. Ever since Christmas Eve, not Thanksgiving Eve. We're starting that. It's trending, or might be trending. Right, 820 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here. Sean, Kelly, Dalton, Dr. Bill, Kane with traffic. Of course, our buddy Jeff Poor with Lanyap and Brian Park, Yellowhammer News. Man who has been following many an Alabama politician, whether they're part of the state delegation or federal delegation around. I mean, a lot of pressers here recently, and I want to talk about that with you. Jeff, I guess let's get to the biggest story here. You mentioned it the other day. You teased about it, but now this story has gotten even more legs. I don't know how many legs, but lots of legs. Mm-hmm. It would be Jim Ziegler 2020.
Jim Ziegler is the first to officially enter the sweepstakes. I think probably Bradley Byrne has been running for a while, just getting his get acquainted sort of campaign around the state. But Jim Ziegler has launched an exploratory committee, which means he can now start raising money for a 2020 U.S. Senate run against this for the seat that's held by Doug Jones right now.
Now, this is all dependent, too. The other part of this is the Jeff Sessions factor, right? I mean, you and you know, smart people on this in the state really don't think that Jeff Sessions is going to make a run at his old gig in 2020. But, I mean, that is the elephant in the room, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the weird thing about it. I'm a little surprised that we're this far removed from him stepping down as Attorney General, and we don't really have an answer from Jeff Sessions saying, I am not running for Senate. So to me, the longer this goes, the better chance you have of Jeff Sessions, you know, running. So that tells me right now that since we haven't heard that he's not going to throw his name in the arena, that he's at least thinking about it. He's considering it. He's probably making the phone calls, figuring out what he's got to do. But, you know, there's probably not a whole lot that Jeff Sessions has to do if he wants to be U.S. Senator. He has to qualify and get on the ballot. And then what happens? Maybe he raises some funds, gets some signs out. And there's enough probably people in this state that are very, very sympathetic to Trump's, you know, way of thinking about Jeff Sessions. He'll probably have to do a little bit more. But it's hard to see with his name recognition and all these things, how you could, as a Republican, wage a campaign against him and think you could win the GOP nomination.
You know, what's interesting, too, you and I got into this a little bit the other day, is when you sit back and look in primary politics, not in general, but primary politics, when different candidates, be it Democrat or Republican, but let's focus on Republican here, come up where they take votes from, right? Because even within a party, within a primary, there's different groups within any given party. So Jim Ziegler, who you said, you know, he gets he got name recognition, he's won twice before. Who does, if Jim Ziegler's in first and he's raising money and he's out there stumping, who does he affect who may say, man, maybe there's not enough room for me in there?
Man, here's what I think, though. I kind of wonder. There's not really that Roy Moore candidate. There's not the candidate that really owns the rural part of the state. I think right now you have Del Marsh, who's the president of the state Senate. I think Bradley Byrne. I think maybe Gary Palmer. These are all establishment, pseudo-establishment Republican names. Republican establishment in Alabama is a little different than the national Republican establishment. But these are your guys that are fixtures in the Republican Party that aren't really, I would say, that aren't really grassroots guys, because they have the money backing them and they have all these things going on to where they have an infrastructure. My thinking is that Ziegler might do well if he gets out in some of these places, because he's just kind of that guy that connects with these folks. I've been to dozens of these local parties, Republican Party events. Jim Ziegler's at a bunch of them. He's a very good retail politician. He connects with these folks. I'd say there's a couple others that do well. I think John Merrill, a little bit to the same extent, Will Ainsworth. But these are the kind of guys that really could get the rural vote. I don't see any of them but Jim Ziegler in that 2020 mix. So I kind of wonder, he may be in, by his presence just being there, he's got to get some votes. And that's going to change the complexion of the race. I don't know if he's got enough mustard to get into a runoff situation, but I do think it takes votes from some candidate, whoever that candidate is that emerges, and it really changes the complexion of the race. It doesn't take a whole lot for that to happen.
It's going to be interesting watching this play out. Also, let's talk about the federal delegation, because you were up listening to Terry Sewell and Selma talk about it. Number one, I think she's backing Pelosi as speaker, so she's one of the Pelosi backers, but also talking about voter suppression.
Yeah, she had a couple of big things. The voter suppression, I think she acknowledges, or she kind of takes the thought that voter suppression is alive well, that people are having, you know, it's impacting elections nationally. And then she says that included here in Alabama. She referred to the thing that happened up here this last cycle in Huntsville, but at Alabama A&M and Oakwood College, and that, you know, how when you register to vote, they send you the mailer, and the way the mailing system was messed up at Alabama A&M and Oakwood College, that people didn't get to vote, that they didn't, they had to be put on the inactive voter rolls, and that suppressed the vote. But she's bought into it. I'll say this about Terry Sewell, having never really seen her anywhere but on the House floor and on TV, I think she's a pretty decent retail politician. I think she connects with people well. That's her element, these town halls and hit these places in the 7th Congressional District. I never got to see outside of her, and she comes off very impressive as a politician, as somebody who really resonates with an audience.
All right. Before we wrap up here, I do want to bring up gas tax. We've been talking about this for a while, and the reason we keep talking about it, y'all, is that the people in Montgomery are telling us in no uncertain terms this is part of what they're talking about in session 2019.
So here's the thing with the gas tax. It's a controversial issue. People don't want their taxes to go up. Right now, you sort of have everybody on board in agreement saying, yeah, we need to do something with the gas tax. Nothing's changed since 1992. All it takes, though, is just one person to be that first person out of line, demagogue. Look at these Republicans. We elect conservatives in office, they want to raise your taxes. And the person that does that is the person that doesn't get whatever they want from the gas tax. Could it be a new road, or new roads, or how it's just distributed, or all these things. And I think right now, it's way early. Session's not till March. But there's a lot of activity going on this gas tax issue, and I think they're trying to get it to where everybody's on the same page and everybody's happy, so that this isn't a big a deal as it could be. Because, like I said, all it takes is that one person making a big deal about it, and then you have a lot of people really upset about it.
Y'all remember that, too. When it goes and there's demagoguing, you got to ask that question, that is this person against something coming out of Montgomery because they're truly against it, or that they're against it because they didn't get what they wanted out of it. I mean, that's a great truism. That's a great screen and filter for people to filter Montgomery politics with.
Yeah, and think about it right now. It's the buzz everywhere. Where's that person that, whoever it is going to emerge as the person speaking out against it? Where is that person right now? Why aren't they speaking out against it right now?
Right.
Furthermore,
right.
Why weren't they speaking out against it during this last election campaign?
Oh, yeah, because they wanted to see if they can get their cut of the action. So.
Right. So that'll be the tell. Keep an eye on that. But I think right now, what's going on in Montgomery is they're trying to make sure that everybody's, that they could get everybody at least on the same page, at least some kind of satisfaction with the process.
Yeah, I mean, the gas tax is going to come out, but the real interesting part is that sausage making for who gets what. And, and I think it's going to be interesting watching. I think R's and D's might not be as important part of this discussion as rural versus urban. And watching those lineups should be interesting as well.
Yeah, and that's, this goes to the bridge discussion we had on Monday in Baldwin County. I think everybody's got their projects. It's easy to demagogue roads. Why is Birmingham getting all the roads? And we're sitting out here in Wilcox County or whatever and not getting our four lane. This just it's not equitable. It's not fair. You'll hear these cases made, I think, once we get closer to the where the process is finally nailed down.
I always love the font of information that is Jeff Poore on state politics and national politics. People want to find you on Twitter. Where are you hanging out?
I'm at twitter.com/Jeff_Poore.
Okay. So, and that is important. You need to follow that Twitter because on Saturday, my friend Jeff and I, Jeff has decided he's going to hang out with the Sullivan family a little bit there in Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. Of course, Jeff, an Auburn man, graduate. I'm an Alabama man, graduate. So we will be there showing that we can
get along.
I don't know if we're going to get along.
But I think we have a predetermined outcome that makes it a little easier to get along. had the battle been a little more equitable, we might be a little more hostile, but you're going into a situation where you kind of know what the outcome is going to be.
Well, I'm going to show you around my college town, mm-hmm. and then next year maybe we'll do the same thing. I'll go to Auburn, and mm-hmm. you show me around. So, and you wonder about the patience of Jeff Poore. He's not only hanging out with the missus and I, but the two Sullivan the little ones are going to be there as well. So
they're growing up so fast.
Yeah, they are. They are big, and they're getting mouthy. And we will take pictures and video and post those up on Jeff's Twitter feed and mine on Saturday. So hopefully you can be part of it. Jeff, I will see you, if not before, I'll see you on Saturday.
Thanks for having me on. And as I say, War Eagle anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Roll Tide, roll.
I can't wait to see your game day predictions.
Yeah, predictions are that there'll be 8 gajillion people in Tuscaloosa. That will be the prediction. 8:30, coming right back. More of Mobile Mornings. All right, Kane, thank you. 837 FM Talk 106.5 show, Mobile Mornings. That's Kelly. That's Dalton. No, that's Kelly. That's Dalton over there.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Dalton.
There they are. Going from left to right on your
right to left.
On your radio.
TV, though.
Speakers. Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying on their speakers, left to right. They're also, of course, Kane's got our traffic, Dr. Bill's got our forecast, and we've got your phone calls, and we'll get to them at 343-0106. Quickly, though, I want to tell you, with Black Friday coming up, you're thinking about Christmas shopping. Do what I have done in the past, and we'll do again this year, and I can tell you right now that it's a quality gift. I've been shaving with Harry's for 3 years now, a little over 3 years, and been telling you about how great the shave is and how much money you save. I mean, it's $2 a blade versus $4 or more you're paying at the grocery store or the pharmacy. And Harry's makes long-lasting quality products, super reasonable prices. And the nice thing is, if you give that gift, that person, that man on your list that's hard to buy a gift for because if they wanted the thing, they already have it or whatever, why not get them a gift that's thoughtful, special, but also practical? And that's one of these gift sets from Harry's. This is happening right now. Ready-to-gift sets come in a handsome gift box, and they have gift sets starting at just $10. 100% quality guarantee. If he doesn't love it, the returns are quick and hassle-free. And a special offer for y'all, we partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including that limited edition holiday set, when you go to harrys.com and enter our code MOBILE at checkout. Plus, we get free shipping. This offer is for new and y'all that are returning customers, but it's only available for the holidays. Each Harry's shaving set comes with that ergonomic weighted handle with the option to engrave. That's a nice touch. German-engineered five-blade cartridges that provide that close, comfortable shave. Foaming shave gel for a rich lather. And a travel cover to protect your blades. And a handsome holiday gift box. Or just want to get something for yourself? That's fine. I'm not here to judge. Redeem your Harry's trial offer to experience the quality of the shave before you commit. Get your holiday shopping done early. Free shipping ends December 12th. So act now. Harry's.com and enter our code MOBILE to get an additional $5 off any shave set while supplies last. It's harrys.com and the code is MOBILE. And by the way, you want to check out what that holiday shave set and the box and the whole thing looks like? I go to my Twitter feed at FMTalk1065 and it is displayed in all its glory right there. I think I put it up by yesterday. You can check it out. All right, to the phones we go. 343-0106 and Bill in downtown Dog River checking in. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Mr. Poor, I suspect conveniently left out a few facts about the Saudis and our oil situation with them. We import about 10% of our oil total from the Saudis. Personally, I wouldn't mind giving up 1 in 10 rides to the grocery store to get rid of the Saudis. The Saudis have never been our friends. Research the term Wahhabism.
Wahhabism, see, sure. I'm familiar.
Yeah, the Saudis are the main bank for radical Islam in the world.
Mm-hmm. So let me throw a wrinkle in there.
They made a deal with them that they would leave them alone if they were free to operate as they wished in Saudi Arabia. Don't forget who was involved in 9/11. Where did Osama bin Laden come from?
Bill, were you listening to me earlier? That's exactly what I said. With you. I mean, but let me throw this little wrinkle here. When you talk about Wahhabism, this is an interesting angle, and Jeff was talking about it. He and I and Kelly and Dalton were talking off air about this. So maybe, and I think it was Paul Bruckman that he said he agreed with. He's reading an op-ed in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, here's kind of an interesting angle. This idea that you keep the Saudis close because what would they be if they were isolated from us, but still with the Wahhabism, with the, you know, I mean, Mecca and Medina are in Saudi Arabia. Like you said, Bill, spot on. Look at the number of hijackers, like I was saying earlier, of 9/11 that came out of Saudi Arabia. Look at the bin Laden, like you said, you know, training grounds there and his roots and the wealth coming out of that country. And look at what it has done for extremist terrorists. And so they said maybe. And I think it's Paul Bruckman saying it, and he's a liberal guy, but he's looking at this, and I think he's got a good sense. If you isolate them, do you lose all possible control over that? I mean, do you keep this very unpalatable relationship? And I agree with you, man. And I said this during Bush, I said this during Obama. I don't change. I find it unpalatable to deal with the Saudis. But do you have a better situation, have some mechanism of control on this radicalization that you wouldn't have if you isolated them? Because they would still have money.
Tell me what control on the radicalism we have now.
What, something more than zero, right? Don't you agree it's something? I mean,
well,
they want to have a relationship.
Something more than zero obviously hasn't worked.
I mean, they need us, whether they're, you know, attacking the people in Yemen or whatever they're doing. They need some kind of go-ahead or turn the other way from the United States that they're getting right now. So maybe there's a trade-off. I don't know what goes on behind closed doors in negotiations, but maybe there's something. So Bruckman's argument is, like all of us that I think are open our minds, that this thing is dirty. This is a stinky relationship. But is this one of those that you have to do because... The opposite is so much worse than not doing anything. I don't know if I agree with it. It's just a theory out there. I think it's worth discussing.
I don't agree with it. And frankly, I think this is a trade-off because our president is compromised in his business deals with the Saudis.
Right. So was Barack Obama compromised?
I don't know, but I'll tell you this. One thing Trump is... tried to end,
but you know Trump is, but you don't know if Barack Obama was, because the reaction's the same way. We've kissed their butt, you know, from a Democrat administration, Republican administration before that with Bush. It's
sir,
been the
sir,
same.
May I finish my statement I was making when you cut in on me?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Okay,
get
please,
after it.
Thank you. Let me. What I was saying was, I don't know if Obama was or not, but Obama pushed alternative energy sources. Now, what has President Trump done? He's done everything he can to end all of that. Trump does, by his own admission, hundreds of millions of dollars of business with them.
Yeah.
How much money did Obama make off the Saudis?
I don't know.
Did he have any business dealings with them?
I don't know.
But we do know about Trump.
Here's a question. You're talking about the energy sources. I would say, yes, there is definitely a push. What would get us to not having to deal with the Saudis faster? Okay, which one would? Opening up, and I'm not saying I'm for this because I have, you know, I have a lot of green tinge to my my conservatism. But if you opened up every place in the United States to full drilling for natural gas and oil, if you opened up and took away all the bulwarks that are in the way for that, because remember, Trump's not only talked about coal and bringing that back stateside, but talked about drilling. You mentioned Barack Obama and alternative energy. And once again, yo, I'm a guy that actually has solar panels and does that, and I think it's cool, and I love the day that it gets around. But which way gets us to not having to deal with the Saudis faster? Opening up full fossil fuel production in the United States, or having some government tax breaks for, you know, whatever solar company gets favor with the administration?
That I can't answer, and neither can you, because we don't know how quickly.
But you could answer the other question. You could say that Trump.
How quickly new discoveries could be made in energy storage and et cetera if money was put on it.
But you're so sure that Trump is the other way. You can't answer the one question, but you're so sure that President Trump's way is the wrong way.
Well, let's face it, President Trump's way is the way we've always done it. How's that working for you?
I don't know. It's the way we've always done it. You just told me that over the term of the gilded one, Barack Obama, that we did all the alternative energy. I thought it was different then. It can't be both.
It was different then.
Well, you just told me it's always been the same.
Saudi Arabia's butt for their oil.
But you told me it was different then. How could it be different and the same?
It was different then because Obama pursued our relationship with the Saudis while doing the alternative energy research. There is a difference.
Okay. You would say it's a 5 to 25%, 25 to 50%, 50 to 75% difference, or 100% difference?
I can't give you that information, and you knew it when you asked it. Good question. But there was a difference. And frankly, I'm not willing to sell out my Christian values for a few drops of oil.
Well, and I would agree with you on that, but the problem is I think when people show up at the pumps and look at the price, you and I might be in the minority on that, Bill. As always, I enjoy our conversations, and we'll take more time to take your calls when we get back at 343-0106. FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on this Thanksgiving Eve. We're getting the maybe we'll have a grid failure on power out there, the way, you know, when like in the Northeast or upper Midwest, when they get real hot temperatures, but they're not used to everybody turning on air conditioners and they get that. Maybe today with all the ovens coming on, getting ready for some cooking, it'd be like, yeah, we're losing the C sector. If something's going on,
well,
it's ovens everywhere.
Let me just add, though, if you are cooking, make sure you check all your spices, because tomorrow is not the day to figure out you needed something that you should have got.
Yes.
Get out there.
Stock up. Get two. No, don't get two. Get one. Because if you get two, then it won't be there when I go there. So just get one. Forget what I just said. All right. Go to the phones. And first up, Ed in Mobile. Hey, Ed.
I got a question to old Bill. I mean, how do you have Christian values being a Democrat with the abortion issue that Democrats support so heavily? And then I got one more thing. How are you... I would rather have a businessman like Trump who is successful than a community organizer giving away billions of dollars to Iran. That's not even apples to apples.
Right. Okay. But I mean, the bigger question, though, and as always, I'm on my island here because I want to point out that playing ball, and yes, I think that's correct. Jeff said it goes as far back as Kennedy. But I mean, there's been Democrats and Republicans playing ball with the Saudis. And I mean, I wish we could figure a way around it. If there, you know, if I had all the wisdom to know all the things going on, that I could really understand it, because they're distasteful to me. Post 9/11, further back to today, yes. I find it distasteful that we play ball with them at all.
Well, how do we give Iran billions of dollars to put back in their nuclear system how did Obama do that? And where would you get four hostages for our billions? And the other thing about Christian values, how can you be a Democrat and be a Christian?
Right.
I don't understand that.
Right. Yeah, you asked that question. I don't know, Ed, but the billions of dollars, and if you remember back, I was hollering about this, but that was, the story is, whether you want to believe it or not, the story is, those were money that Iran had in U.S. or U.S.-controlled banks at the time of the takeover of the Shah. They were seized. Those bank accounts were seized or frozen. We were letting him have their money back. Now, that doesn't mean I think that's a great idea. I believe all of it. I'm just telling you what you do need to know what the discussion was back then. And the idea that, we give them their money back and they do X, Y, and Z and we do this and they don't develop their nuke program. I don't trust the Iranians either. And for a couple of reasons. Number one, the interest, this is what people don't understand when they get all upset about Trump's nationalism, is the idea that the interest of Americans should come first. Okay, that is one of the things that resonated with so many people who went out and voted for Trump. At the same time, you got to understand the interest of an Iranian should be number one in their cause, and Saudi's number one. But if their general life interest don't even kind of match up with what we do, how can we work together? I mean, they had a big deal the other day. What was it? The first woman got her driver's license or something in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah.
They're like,
yeah.
Oh, look, women. They're moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, they weren't even allowed to drive till this year.
Right, right. Oh, they're moving forward. I understand there's bigger issues. Yes, yes, one. Okay, yeah.
I'm going to be, I'm silver lining with everything.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. That's one of the reasons you break frowns, turn upside down around here.
Oh, it's a commercial in the making.
With where we are in this day and age with technology and how we heard so quickly that Turkey knew that the Saudis were behind this murder of Khashoggi. And remember, they were saying that it was all recorded on his Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. And we heard about it here in America pretty much instantly after Turkey let us know. This wouldn't have happened a decade ago, 20 years ago.
Correct.
I don't know if we would have even heard about this. So with the United States relations with Saudi Arabia and all these other countries for decades and decades, how much has gone on that we just don't know about? And then when you bring in all Americans, and all Americans are weighing in on what we should or shouldn't do, that has to put it has to make it a lot tougher for the leadership. It kind of reminds me of, a kid at home. The food is on the table when it comes time for dinner, but they might not know what mom and dad do to get that food on the dinner table, what they're going out during the day, where they're going to work. What has the federal government been doing? What kind of deals have they been cutting that we don't know about that keeps us as a nation safe but might not be morally in the best interest of Americans?
We've done this over time. I mean, we have, whether it be the intelligence department or our military has had to do very tough things that are right on the edge for the protection of this nation. I get it. I'm aware enough to know that I don't know all those things.
You're not supposed to.
Yes, and I'm not supposed
to. Right, right.
But I do say if the people that do know all those things, if there's a way down the road, whether it's more production of energy here, be it fossil fuels until we get, I'm a solar guy. People like try to box me in. I'm out of the people that argue with me. I'm like, I'm the dude that's got solar panels. You know, I'm into this. But I would argue that whatever we can do as a nation to get to a point where for world safety and for the business of the of energy for our country, we can start to break those bonds with people like the Saudis, I'm in.
We also need to trust our intelligence. They are in those roles for a reason. And when we don't trust our own intelligence, we have a bigger problem that's going to impact our country as a whole for generations to come.
There we go. And we will be back with you on Friday. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I'll be back at noon.